Now, are peace walls here to stay for the foreseeable future? A new report has found the number of people who want to keep the barriers is increasing. In 2012, a survey found 22% of residents wanted the walls to keep up. Now, that's gone up to 30%. Many more Protestants, 44%, want the walls to stay compared to Catholics, 23%. Where does that leave Stormont's strategy then to bring all the walls down by 2023? Duncan Morrow is one of the authors of this new report from the University of Ulster. Morning to you, Duncan.
Good morning.
So tell us, spell this out to us.
Well, I think the report is, first of all, it's a repeat of a survey that was done in 2012. And so the comparisons are with an original baseline survey. The second thing to say is that it is an attempt to try to take the temperature of how people feel about these issues in 2015. And suppose we found quite a number of things, including, as you've said, that more people now say they want things left the way they are.
Why is that?
And less people. Well, it is interesting because I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think in some ways it's difficult in a single survey to work out. Is that to do with the issues at the peace wall? Because it doesn't appear to be so many. But it may be that the wider climate in the period between 2012 and 2015 has just deteriorated. And there's other material to suggest that is the case, that it's about trust and confidence more widely in the community, and that that works its way through here. But of course, that's difficult to tell from a single survey.
So people would be more frightened?
Well, there are interesting issues there, that safety, certainly, even whatever it is, 17, 18 years since the Good Friday Agreement and 20 years since the ceasefires, that fear still plays a real part. Security is one of the reasons people still give, and concerns that if this comes down, there will be security consequences. And I think that's a real question, not just about the wall, but
I think there'll be attacks in their homes, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the question then is, well, what are the alternatives? Is it literally true that on these areas, they're the only way to formally segregate people and make that mark with all of the consequences that we know that that has for the economy? And so the question is that true? Why is it true? What can be done about it? I mean, you asked at the beginning, or you in your heading, what are the consequences for a policy strategy? Well, I suppose one of the benefits of this is a 10-year strategy, so it's longer than normal. And part of this will feed into saying, well, what would have to be done in the next 8 years if you're going to get anywhere near it? I suppose the news that's interesting and important for that is that as things stand, this isn't getting easier. This is getting more complicated because people have more concerns than they were suggesting before. In that sense, it's depressing. To push the other side, and I'm not just here to push a Pollyanna version, there is evidence, for example, that contact across the wall between younger people is greater than it was between older people, that that contact is relatively good. It's sporadic.
Do you know what? Just when you say that, I do wonder, just increasingly as I talk to more and more people about a whole range of things, I wonder, is that generation gap really significant now, and how differently about a whole gamut of things in Northern Ireland a younger generation is thinking compared to the older?
Well, obviously, these things are not in this particular survey in detail, but there is certainly a different generation on a whole lot of issues. Social issues, for example, we know that, for example, on the equal gay marriage issue, that has revolutionised by generation as much as by anything else, and there's evidence that it's not a community conflict issue, it's a different thing. So yes, on the other hand, it is definitely true that young people at times reflect the wider tensions in society. And so I was part of another survey which looked at community relations attitudes. This was one that is being followed up actually today, and what it said was that young people tend to either be at the centre of these issues, so they're more optimistic when there's optimism, more pessimistic when there's pessimism. And so you have to watch a simplistic thing, but definitely there's attitudinal change happening. There's something is happening in the younger generation.
So do you reckon this notion that Peter Robinson and Martin McGuinness had, the walls to come down by 2023, is pie in the sky?
Well, certainly the survey suggests that the majority of people in these areas think it's unrealistic as a target. The other thing that we got fed back when we presented this to people living in the areas yesterday was actually the This requires a whole plan about regeneration, about a whole different idea. It's not just a question of taking a wall down. It's what's the future? What does that mean? And unless that's spelt out in the next few years, then it's going to be difficult to get consent to get them down. If people are being offered an opportunity to buy into a better future, then they might do so. If they just think it's about a wall down with no change, because perhaps one of the most obvious statistics coming out of this is that only 3% of people living in interface areas said they saw any economic benefit out of the peace process. I mean, that suggests that there's a real sense in some of these areas that it's not just about the conflict and post-conflict, it is about neglect and a sense of abandonment in some of these communities.
SLP MLA Claire Hannah, listening to this today. Are you optimistic, Claire?
Well, no, it is quite disappointing that we do seem to be going backwards in terms of the numbers of people. But, you know, there are some positives to pick out, and Duncan mentioned some of them. More people want the walls down than want them to stay up. And indeed, some of those trends are changing across younger people. I think we need to not get hung up on the bricks or the metal. You know, it isn't just about the walls. It is about them being a symptom of division, and it's about sectarianism, and it's about the fact that actually, you know, those negative behaviour, people throwing golf balls over the wall, or those behaviours exist in other places as well, but here they're fuelled by sectarianism and they're almost legitimised by that division.
But the walls can't come down without community support.
No, they can't, and I think we need to build that confidence, and there is, we need...
Why?
Well, there's a lot of things that we can do. We need to, first of all, believe that we can do it. I mean, look at other cities, Glasgow and Liverpool, places like that had sectarian violence 2 centuries ago, and they've dealt with them. And other places around the world have dealt with probably deeper problems with fewer resources. So we need to, first of all, believe that we can do it. And we need to look at the fact that, you know, consciously or unconsciously, those who are supposed to be leading us away from this, and that includes political parties, and I think it includes all political parties, but probably those who get most of the votes here are probably benefiting in ways, whether they know it or they not, on the division, and they are perpetuating and probably fueling some of those issues around fear and victimhood, and we'll see that coming in the next few months. They'll kind of meet in the middle in the messaging about that it's a race and that it's a competition to get most votes, and that is fueling that lack of security. And I understand we can't just pull them down until people feel confident, but we can't just give up either. You know, we need to decide that we're going to do this. We need to renew that common purpose. We had it, you know, 15, 20 years ago, people believed they would come down and they wanted them to come down, and we've sort of worn everybody down with process, but it could be done. We need to start being a bit more circumspect with our language. We need to respect. This is
more about language, much more than language, though, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. It is, Stephen. And
this is about people feeling safe with each other.
Sure, it's about
that basic, fundamental feeling safe about people you live beside.
And there are practical things that we can do. We can try and address the accelerants for sectarianism, and the things that keep us in a situation where we have housing that is very single identity. And if we were able to integrate housing in a more practical way, then the walls just simply wouldn't exist if we weren't separating Catholic and Protestant areas. And there are things we can do. If we look at accelerants like the past and parades and flags, we could meaningfully address those, and none of those things are properly addressed in the strategies that have come from the executive today. If you look at, integrating housing is one of the biggest challenges. If you look at an attempt at a shared housing project in Newton Abbey, and before it had even opened, tricolours were erected to claim it for one side. The same thing happened. It was union flags in my own constituency and carried up. And we had a very weak-kneed response to that from the authorities. If we had the proper rule of law, that things like that kind of accelerant and fueling sectarianism was properly dealt with in the way that my colleague posters about burglary were dealt with last week. You know, he was ordered to take those down, but people who are fueling that division are probably mollycoddled a little bit and not made to stop that behaviour. If we could address, if people had confidence that we were going to address those things, they'd have confidence that we're going to address things like missiles coming over the walls.
Well, I mean, I think just to come in on that, I mean, what we were looking at here was, of course, the attitudes of people actually living there. What becomes clear is that these went up for security reasons, and the security issue needs to be dealt with. And part of that is why this much into a ceasefire, people still frightened of each other. So there's a real issue there that people feel that this is well grounded. It's not just historical. And so something has to be done about that security question. Is it still okay to do these kind of things? I think the second part is that they went up for security reasons, but the taking them down, it will be a revolution and regeneration. So it will require a whole series of different interventions, some of which are about, you know, working out how we do all these cultural disputes, but some of which are around economic and social regeneration and issues, as Claire's talking about housing.
Ian McLaughlin from the Lower Shankill Community Association. Morning, Ian.
Hi, Sam.
Maybe some of the people in these areas are right to be frightened. Maybe if the walls did come down, maybe they would get bricked and attacked. What about that first scenario?
Well, Stephen,
maybe the fear isn't unfounded.
Well, some of the conversations that are taking place have been changed recently to reflect the fact that, you know, some of the headline grabs over the past year has been big news about the PSNI cuts in budgets. If the PSNI are involved in any conversations around peace walls, they have a very standard approach that they use when they say, look, we will support changes made by residents, but, you know, let's be clear, we cannot have Land Rover sitting at these interfaces 24 hours a day. So once an ordinary resident hears a statement such as that, which is probably true and probably correct, it almost immediately sets that conversation back, because if that person knows nothing except a barrier which has been in place at the bottom of their street for the past number of years, there's a fear factor built in straight away where they say, my goodness, if that wall goes tomorrow, there's no police going to be there all day, do I feel safe? Sometimes the answer is, well, no, I don't actually. And that's a big issue when you talk about people's safety. People's safety has to be paramount in any of these conversations, Stephen, you know.
And is the fear real? Is it genuine?
I think PSNI statistics will show that interface incidents have reduced over the past number of years. But that's small or little comfort to someone who has actually experienced one of these attacks. So there has to be a balance made between the statistics and the reality of people who actually live at these barriers.
Okay, interesting stuff. Claire and Ian, thank you very much. Duncan, thank you for coming in this morning.